the fathers and mother, and I am no friend to the sisters and brothers, and I am no friend to the weak and distressed, and I am no friend to the poor and oppressed. But I'm a friend of the fetus, a friend of incomparable worth. I'm a friend of the fetus, right up to the moment of birth. Once it's a baby, I will not go near it. I will not feed it, and I will not rear it. And when it is crying, I won't even hear it. For I have no room in my heart for a human. But I'm a friend of the fetus, a friend of incomparable worth. I'm a friend of the fetus, right up to the moment of birth. I will not care for it, I won't be there for it. I will not weep for it, I won't lose sleep for it. I'll back away from it, I won't go gray from it. I will not pray for it, and I won't pay for it. But I'm a friend of the fetus, a friend of incomparable worth, not comparable. I'm a friend of the fetus, right up to the moment of birth. Let it get a job, right up to the moment of birth.
And that was another Dave Lippmann song, I'm a Friend of the Fetus. It's actually about 27, 28 years old. But what with the Supreme Court being what it is, might become very contemporary. Next up, I'm going to play, and I guess I'm likely to end the show with this, an interview with James Loewen, the author of Lies My Teacher Told Me, who I've played before at different points, but never this particular interview, which I stole from YouTube. But I found it interesting enough to want to pass on to you. So you be the judge. Loewen has written a lot about teaching methods, how to learn real ways of becoming a historian, not simply someone who repeats the various fantasies and myths that are handed down, but who actually researches into how to discover what, as close as we can, real history is about. And he's also written a lot debunking some of the great war criminals of our time who've been cast as heroes, like Christopher Columbus. Anyway, enjoy, and I guess this is it for this Sunday show, though I'm never quite sure until the very last part of the show, so we'll see.
Ocala's Information Station, 1370 WOCA. Ocala!
All right, 5 minutes after 11 o'clock. Thank you for tuning in. I am so looking forward to this next segment with James W. Loewen, and I hope I said his name right. Before I introduce you to him, I want to tell you something, that right here in our county, just about in our city, in Silver Springs, in the attraction, and I'm sure most of you have seen it, there's a statue of Osceola, the Seminole Indian chief. And there he stands with a plaque underneath him that commemorates that spot as a spot in history. And so we recognize him as a great man who once lived. But when you read what it says, it occurs to you that, wow, we're celebrating him as a great man, but look what we did to him. This is the place, that was the place, where he met with the white man, for lack of a better way to say this, and finally agreed to move himself and the other Seminoles out to Oklahoma. In other words, these people who just came here from Europe are now bullying the people who lived here for hundreds and hundreds of years and telling them, you can't live here anymore. You're going to have to move out to Oklahoma.
Yep.
It is a little bit embarrassing, I guess, because, you know, we're part of that. I'm part of that European heritage. Although my family wasn't here yet.
No.
At that time. But, well, you know what? You look back at history and you say, wow, we have really made some mistakes along the way. If you grew up watching cowboy movies, you were led to believe that the Indians were the bad guys and the cowboys were the good guys, except for the bad cowboys. But, but pretty much the Indians were the savages. And it was exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. James W. Loewen has a book. It's more like a teaching guide. I'm not really sure what to call it, but it's wonderfully done.
It's fascinating.
It is called Lies My Teacher Told Me About Christopher Columbus. I wonder how much flack he's getting for this, but he makes a really good case, and knowing what we know about Osceola, et cetera, makes you realize there's probably a lot of truth to this. James Loewen is the Professor Emeritus of Sociology at the University of Vermont. He's an historian. He's an editor. He's an award-winning, best-selling author. He's the recipient of the Cox Johnson Fraser Award, which is he's the only white person to win that honor, by the way.
Yeah.
The National Book Award and the Oliver Cromwell Cox Award for Distinguished Anti-Racist Scholarship, and the Spirit of America Award. Obviously, got a lot of credentials to his name. James W. Loewen told me I could call him Jim after I've introduced him properly. So from this point on, good morning, Jim. How are you?
Hi, I'm glad to be with you.
How did I do with your last name?
You did great. And only the sheriff calls me James, you know, to my face.
The sheriff?
He's buds.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Washington, D.C., I moved there. I used to teach at the University of Vermont, and before that I taught at Tougaloo College, which is a black college in Mississippi. So I tell people I taught at the blackest and the whitest schools in America, which is more or less true. And then Lies My Teacher Told Me became a wonderful bestseller. It's actually, I think, the best-selling book by a living sociologist. And so I quit my day job and moved to D.C., and now I do things like write my next book and go around the country giving talks.
Oh, wow. But before you tell me about this, I want to tell you, I want to brag a little bit about my whiteness. Are you ready?
Sure.
My whiteness.
I heard.
What? I have been called the hippest white dude in Ocala.
Well, that's very good.
And this is the town you're talking to, Ocala. So I got the honor of having that title. It's a silly radio thing. I used to play some of the gospel music.
I have to ask, what do you kids think of that?
Oh, my son loves it. Anyway, Dad's the hippest white guy in town. So tell me about Columbus. What do we get wrong about Columbus?
Well, just about everything. In fact, I have a long paragraph that is a kind of a distillation of what all the textbooks say, kind of put together, about Christopher Columbus. And then I repeat the paragraph, putting in bold what we know to be true for sure. And it's about one-fifth of a paragraph, you know?
Wow.
I mean, and the biggest problem, really, is that the biggest problem is that we celebrate him. It's important to remember him, but it's not important to celebrate him. And that's because of what he started doing in 1493. And, of course, what we all remember, you know, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue and discovered America. I'm sure your listeners are already on top of that one. I tell my audiences, yes, he discovered America in the same sense that about 30 years ago I discovered oregano. You know? Well, I mean, it was new to me, you know.
Yeah,
It's good. I like it. Anyway, so he didn't discover America. And, in fact, in 1492, he didn't do anything that Leif Erikson and his successors, the Norse, had done in about 1003. But in 1493, he does something completely new in the history of the world. He gets outfitted by the King and Queen of Spain with 17 ships, with attack dogs, with armored horses, with between 1,000 and 2,000 soldiers, with cannons, and he proceeds to take over the island of Haiti, renames it Hispaniola, or Little Spain, and never had one country taken over another on the other side of an ocean in world history.
Oh, wow.
So that's new. And, of course, it's the beginning of what proceeds to happen all over the place. I mean, the Spanish then do it in Mexico. They do it in Peru. Of course, the British do it in Canada and the United States. The French do it. Even little places like Holland end up with colonies in South America and tried to have one in North America and took over Indonesia. And so this is the beginning of that whole process. And it's really a horrific process, especially because when he landed in Haiti, there were about 3 million people living there. And 60 years later, in terms of native people, there were about zero people living there.
Oh.
Well, that is the true definition. I mean, that's the literal definition of genocide.
Yeah, well, it is. It's... not all on purpose. The Spanish did do terrible things to the Indians. I mean, they actually used native people on Haiti as a mobile source of dog food. In other words, when they're on their next enslaving expedition, and of course Columbus started the transatlantic slave trade, only he started it from west to east of native people to Spain and to the Canary Islands, and he sent back 5,000 of them about in chains. And then that didn't work so well because they died, and so his son started it in the opposite direction from east to west, and of course of African people. So this is the guy we're celebrating.
Yeah,
but anyway...
Yeah.
Back to the dog food story. I mean, not to try to be horrific about it, but
well, it's Halloween, so you can do that.
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, you're on an expedition. You are trying to capture and stop people from resisting, and it was very hapless resistance because they didn't have the weapons that matched at all. Of course, so you're attacking the next village and. You've got these attack dogs. Well, you don't want to bring, have people carry food around for them. So you just bring along an enslaved Indian. And at the right time, you turn the dogs loose on him or her, and they eat him.
Oh, my God.
That's the dog food I'm talking about.
What I know somebody's going to want me to ask, or they'll call in and ask it themselves, so I might as well ask it. How do we know these things? How do we know these facts?
That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because many Spaniards didn't agree with his policies, and so they wrote about them. This is another thing that people often say, well, Loewen, you're too tough on Columbus. I mean, after all, this was 1492, or more accurately, 1493 to 1505 or so. Everybody was in favor of slavery back then. Well, that's not so. First of all, the Arawak Indians were not in favor of it. They're the people getting enslaved. And second of all, there were all kinds of Spaniards who were not in favor of it. And my very favorite is a guy named Bartolome de las Casas. He was a conquistador. That is to say, he started out as another one of these Spaniard conquerors. What happens is they get, and he got, and encomiended, that means he got commended a village, which means, here, this is your village. Do
wow.
what you want with it.
Wow.
Okay? You can enslave them. You can kill them if you want. You can make them pay you a ransom. There's all kinds of things you can do with them. And he heard a priest give a Christmas Day sermon about this. I'm not sure, but it was certainly a sermon about it that just exoriated the Spanish. What right do you have to do these terrible things to the Indians? Are they not people? Et cetera, that you call yourself Christians? And he was convinced by it. So he wasn't even allowed to free his village. That was illegal. So all he could do was return it to the crown. So he did that. And then he became a priest himself. And he got appointed defender of the Indians. And he spent the rest of his long life, he lived to be 92 years old, writing this stuff down.
Wow.
So he actually personally knew Columbus. In fact, he was the first great historian of the Americas. Only because of him do we still have records left of the first and third voyage, because he wrote it all down in a transcription of the original, and now the original
is gone. Well, there you go. That answers that question. We do have the phones ringing. Are you okay with taking phone calls?
Sure, of course.
All right, let me take one. Good morning. Thank you for waiting and for calling. You're on the air with Jim Loewen.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Good.
Yes, I'm very interested in your program today and your book and everything because when I was in school, you know, they just taught me one thing that, you know, slavery was kind of like, you know, being an African-American or a black man, my fault. So as I got older, I learned the truth. And what you're saying today, you know, is kind of, you know, very interesting because me, myself, I can hold a lot of things, you know, in being ill about it or unforgiveness. But, you know, by the grace of God, you know, I just forgive people and move on. But I really liked your show today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's just a disgrace, some of the things that we've done as people to each other. I can't imagine having another human being as future dog food. Absolutely disgusting. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the call. I appreciate the call.
Let me throw something in here, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I think kids are still learning what I call the litany or the list of the great explorers. And Columbus isn't even at the beginning of that list. Maybe the beginning of it is Prince Philip the Navigator of Portugal. He actually never left home, but he did do a bunch of things. He was interested in navigation, and he sent explorers out around the western coast of Africa around 1450 or even a little before. And these folks proceed to enslave people that they come into contact with, but it's not quite that simple. They have a new phenomenon. They have caravels. This is a ship that can sail against the wind. Well, they didn't invent that. That came from Arabs and probably originally from Indians, that is, people from India. They combine those with bigger ships. They combine them with gunpowder and cannons, which, of course, they get from the idea anyway from China. And by the time they're done, when they land opposite, or they don't even land, when they arrive opposite your small town on the coast of West Africa, they are a force. They're like Genghis Khan's, you know, 5,000 people on horseback, except they're on shipback, shall we say. So they go around the coast of Africa making alliances with people on the coast, giving them a few guns, giving them liquor and other things, and starting the slave trade. You know, they then capture the next group inland and sell them to the Portuguese. So pretty soon, slavery in Europe becomes black slavery. It had been white slavery, just like blacks had enslaved each other in Africa and Native Americans had enslaved each other in the Western Hemisphere. But now it's got this racial tinge, and of course it's had it ever since. And that makes it much, much worse, because now suddenly there's no acculturation. That is, the old slaves, for instance, Slavs, we got the word slave from the word Slav, who were enslaved by Arabs and also by German nation states and stuff. Well, they could learn Arabic or they could learn German, and they can pretty soon pass for Arabs. And so nobody enslaves them for the 7th and 10th and 12th generation. But this starts happening with racial slavery, and we're still living with the results of it, because even though slavery is over pretty much, we've still got its handmaiden, which, of course, is racism. And so I talk about that in this book, too, because this is a new form of slavery and a new ideology.
Wow. You're making so much sense. I hope that we're at the tail end of that. I think you're right. But, you know, we sit here at the mall, which is where we broadcast from, and I've seen so many a young white man with a young black girl or something like that, and you see a lot of that in children.
I think racism is giving up the ghost slowly, and I think it's great.
Yeah.
And let me give you an idea of a place where it's still around, though. I'm sure you've flown in an airplane.
Yes, I have.
All right, when you fly in an airplane, what's right in front of you? Well, there's a barf bag, but there's also the SkyMall catalog, right?
Right.
It's the most widely distributed catalog in America because it's in the front pocket and right in front of you every time you take an airplane trip. It's even on Amtrak now. They don't call it SkyMall. They call it Travel Mall.
Okay.
All right. And it's, you know, it's a catalog of catalogs. It has Haverhill stuff and Sharper Image stuff. Mm-hmm. It has a doorbell that rings all over your house. It has trampolines. But it doesn't have people of color. It doesn't have black models. It doesn't have even Asian models or even Latino models. And you might ask, how do I know it doesn't have a Latino? Because it doesn't have any brunettes or almost none. Almost every single model in there is a blonde white person. And I, having been formerly blonde and now a bald white person, I'm not exactly against this, but I think it's an outrage when you think about it.
Yeah,
because it applies
yeah.
to all of us, you know, but black folks don't ring doorbells or don't jump on trampolines or whatever.
Okay,
know?
Right. But in, just to kind of, I guess, level the playing field a little bit, not that I'm challenging what you just said, but what you just described was TV. It was almost all magazines. It was almost all
yeah.
movies.
Okay.
And that landscape has changed for the for the better. So
yeah.
so the last holdout is that magazine in the airplane. So
well, it's not the there's a lot of catalogs still do that. But you're right. No, there's things like the United Colors of Benetton, which is a campaign that's now 20 years old or so, where they deliberately had models of all different colors and ethnic groups and so on. So I think, you know, I am an optimist.
Rob and I do music, and one of the songs we have is called Dreams of Men and Women. And in the song Dreams of Men and Women, there's a line that says, that among these children, our own progeny, we are the pilgrims. We are their history. They have a hard time trying to understand. How can you blame them? And what the point is this is a song that takes place in the future, and they're looking back at us, and they're calling us primitive. And how can you blame them?
Well, and of course, our history textbooks make us more out to lunch because they are still racist in various ways, including their treatment of Columbus.
Mm-hmm. When the early explorers came, like Columbus and the people before him, why is it that they left their homes with the intent on finding the new land, but if they find other people there, how come they didn't just try to get along with them instead of right away want to conquer them and wipe them out?
Isn't that interesting? That last phrase isn't quite accurate. They didn't really want to wipe them out. That was mostly done by the diseases that they brought with them by accident. But they certainly did want to conquer them, and they certainly did want to make money off of them. And I have to say that religion played a role. And, you know, there's three so-called religions of the book. That's Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And they're very different religions than the religions that were here in the Americas. The religions in the Americas are all place-based. So, for instance, I used to live in Vermont. And in Vermont, the Abenaki Indians had and still have a religion in which they believe in this great god. He is a male god, I have to admit. And he's got a really long name I can't even pronounce. But he made the Champlain Valley. And when he finished making it, it was so beautiful that he converted himself into this little island, which is in the middle of the lake, kind of, so that he could stay there and enjoy it forever. And so this island is, of course, a sacred spot to them, and they still make tobacco offerings there maybe more than once a year, but at least once a year.
Oh, sounds like a good thing.
Well, they're not going to go try to take over the Mohawks or take over the British in Great Britain because they'd just be leaving their god behind. But you see, Columbus specifically actually has as a mission to convert these Indians, or if they won't convert, to kill them. Because he can go anywhere because his religion is contained in
the book. Which is exactly what we're hearing now from some of the extremists like ISIS.
This, of course.
Same exact thing, yeah.
It's exactly the same thing that... do we have time for me to read you a long paragraph?
I think so. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. This is a paragraph. It was written about Vasco da Gama. Do you folks remember Vasco da Gama? He's one of the famous explorers.
I do remember the name. I can't tell you what I remembered. Yeah.
Some people remember that he discovered India. Now, of course, there were already some Indians in India. But what he did was he's the guy who sailed around the bottom part of Africa and made it all the way to India. Of course, he had Arab guides and such. He didn't really do it on his own, but he gets to India. Well, what did he do when he got there? That's always the question to ask. What did Columbus do when he got here? Well, on da Gama's second trip, just like Columbus on his second trip, he goes back with a whole bunch of armed ships, and he's outside, he's right next to the port of Calicut, a city in southern India. And he's just finished shelling them because he's demanding that they get rid of all their Muslims, because, of course, Christianity doesn't like Islam. And they've been trading with these Muslims for centuries. Muslims are running some of their banks. They don't want to get rid of their Muslims, so he shells them. And coming on the scene then is a bunch of ships that are Arab ships. Of course, they're Muslim Arab ships. Two big ships and a bunch of littler ships. And so here's what happens. The caravels, this is the Portuguese ships, went to them. I'm reading from an account by a guy who was there. And the Moors could not fly as they were laden. And the caravels brought them to Da Gama. He then ordered the boats to go and plunder the small vessels, which were 16, and the two ships. And they took a whole bunch of rice and butter and stuff like that. Then he commanded his crew to cut off the hands and ears and noses all the crews and put all that is, put the hands, the ears, and the noses, onto one of the small vessels. When all of the people had been done to that way, he then ordered their feet to be tied together, and they had no hands with which to untie them. And in order that they should not untie them with their teeth, he ordered his crew to strike upon their teeth with staves, and they knocked their teeth down into their throats. And then I'll skip a little. It actually is so sad it makes me cry sometimes. He piles them onto one of the two larger ships with a whole bunch of mats and stuff and oil and sets it afire and sets it sailing into the port so that the people in the port have some idea of who and what they're dealing with. How's that?
That is
awful. Then
he
sends a small vessel with all the little hands and ears and stuff without firing it so that they can see what he, you know, see the...
Wow. That is horrible. Wow.
And this is supposedly part of Western civilization, conquering the world. You're going to take